This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Nash feeds to the high slot. Pastrnak, Listery scores! David Pastrnak threw one inside the far post. It was Brad Marchand creating the screen. The Bruins are within one, trailing 2-1 here in Dallas. Marchand over the line, left side. Center, Schaller, walks in, shoots. He scores! He went forehand, backhand, got Letnin to commit and swept it inside the post. A shorty, and the Bruins have tied it at two. Slapped out in front, they score! Marchand able to drive to the front of the net. And David Pastrnak reached out to his right and shoveled it by a fallen Letnin to make it 3-2 Bruins with 11 seconds left. He'll fire it from long range out at center ice. The horn sounds. A stunning win for the Boston Bruins on the road. The ultimate in character. What a victory by the guys in black and gold.
Welcome into another edition of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. We've got about 2 weeks to go in the regular season. And we've been saying this for the last few weeks, but once again last night, man, it feels like something good is happening with this team. They're never say die attitude. They're never out of a game. And you see it again last night. 3-goal third period to beat the Dallas Stars on the road, shorthanded is an understatement. And hopefully getting a little bit healthier as they head toward the postseason in a couple of weeks. We've got lots to touch on. Ryan Johnston here in the Town Fair Tire Studios, joined in studio for the full two this week by Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston.
What's up, Ry?
How are you?
Good. I've been saying about this team for a while that there's a special feeling. You know, you've sensed it, and I totally bought in, wrote a column that I think they're going to win the Cup when I was in Carolina and saw that come back in the third period. And I know it was against a team that's kind of in a tough spot, but to have guys go down, to come back, see a Pastrnak hat trick in the third period, them score 5 goals, come back, and then a couple days later, shut down the Tampa Bay Lightning, missing all the players that they were missing, and win in convincing fashion, 3-0. That just further cemented it for me that, you know, there's an aura of greatness around this team. Not greatness in the sense of, you know, they're a dynasty or they've done all these great things. An aura of greatness in something great is coming with this team. You can feel it around them that they have the potential to do something great this year when you see everything that's gone on from beginning to end this season, whether it's the rookies all coming in and working out, whether it's all the comebacks that they've had, whether it's their ability to fight through injuries a couple of different times now, whether it was Don Sweeney getting the job done at the trade deadline and bringing in all the depth pieces that clearly they've needed now because of injury, whether it was the difference that Bruce Cassidy has made or, you know, the seasons that a lot of the veterans have had, whether it's Ryan Donato coming in all of a sudden and making an impact here towards the end of the year. There's been so many special, interesting, different things about this team this year that kind of set it apart that you start to expect special things from them. And I think you should expect that in the playoffs because they've shown they're capable of it both mentally and physically. And, you know, if you're a Bruins fan, you should be tremendously excited about what this spring has to offer because they could do some extremely good things.
Yeah, I mean, it would. Look, I know they're in a tough division and the first and second round matchups are not pushovers by any stretch of the imagination.
Especially the first one, probably.
Yeah.
That's going to be a tough one.
It's going to be a tough road. But it just feels like this team, you know, no matter what they've been up against this year. I mean, look, we have seen teams, after what this team went through in the first month and a half of the season, we've seen teams get derailed for an entire season by a stretch like that, where you're missing big guys out of your lineup. You're not playing well, you know, and like,
and you're in a stretch of 21 games and 39 days to close out the season.
Right.
Oh, by the way,
right.
Throw that in there too.
Well, and not only that, you're going through that stretch with a myriad of injuries of talented players. I mean, this isn't like you're losing your sixth defenseman. You're missing your entire top two pair, your entire top pairing defense. You're missing Patrice Bergeron, your number one center, who does everything for this team. You're missing the guy that you went out and got at the trade deadline now in Rick Nash. You're missing Torrey Krug now. You're missing David Backes. Like, it is insane. And you play a team like Dallas last night, and it's been, you know, St. Louis was the same way the other night, and look, these are teams that are fighting to get into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Dallas came out in the first 5 minutes of that game last night, like their hair was on fire.
Yeah.
And like the Bruins, look, they know they're in the playoffs. They've still got a chance to potentially to catch Tampa Bay, but they're in the playoffs. They have every reason to make excuses and say, oh, we're missing seven guys off of our team. We're playing a team that's, you know, that's pushing to get into the playoffs. You know, we're on the road for the sixth time in seven games. You know, it's not the end of the world if we lose this game. They have no business coming back from two goals down in a game like that last night. And they do it anyway.
I feel like in some ways, well, in a lot of ways, hockey teams take their cues from the coach and his attitude. And you see that a lot, right? And I think in years past with Claude, he would use the excuses. And you hear him doing it in Montreal this year. And I think he would allow, in using those excuses post-game and when he was talking to us and just when he was talking to anybody, I think he almost allowed the players to take the out too and to use the excuse and to use that as a crutch. And, you know, well, great if we win, but we have a reason if we lose kind of thing. And you don't see Bruce Cassidy doing that at all. And that is not his style. That is not what he's about. And I think he's sent that sort of vibe down from up on top from the coaching staff in the message that goes down to the players. And I think it plays out not only just because of the makeup of the players. I think that's got something to do with it, too, obviously. It's got a big part of it. But I think the fact that nobody in the organization allows that to be an out or an excuse, and they're just dismissing it kind of out of hand, especially now. You know, we played through injuries earlier in the season. We should be able to do it now. That's kind of the message you would get from talking to Cassidy. I think that makes a big difference. And I think it doesn't allow them to use any of this adversity or any of these things for excuses like you potentially could. I mean, look. Since Patrice Bergeron's gone out of the lineup, they've gone 9-2-2. Since Zdeno Chara and Jake DeBrusque went down, they've gone 8-2-2. Since then, they also lost Charlie McAvoy against Montreal. They've gone 7-2-2. They just keep winning as they keep losing all of these players and as these games compound and the schedule gets more dense. I mean, we talked about what a ridiculously tough month, the month of March, was going to be for them. And they just are sailing through it, getting points, winning games, and continuing to keep pace with the Tampa Bay Lightning. This team has cleared every single hurdle this season that you've thrown in front of them, and it's been very impressive.
I put so much of it on Cassidy because ultimately, and look, we're seeing the emergence of these young players, and he has a role in that, and his staff has a role in that, and there's no question. Kevin Dean's done a terrific job with some of the defensive, you know, the defensemen.
Yep.
But ultimately, this is the same group of leaders in this room that Claude Julien had.
Mm-hmm.
And it is an entirely different team. And we questioned over the course of the last two or three years with under Claude about the leadership in that room. Like, are these guys, you know, are they stepping up? Are they saying anything? Are they kicking a little butt in there? Or are they just letting it happen? And you'd see the team, you know, fade at the end of the season and miss the playoffs. And since Cassidy took over, it's been an entirely different mindset. And now you not only do you not question the leadership, but you're praising the leadership on this team. And it's the same guys. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's the same. It's Chara and Bergeron and Krejci and Backes and, like, all the guys that were there before are still there. And now they're not only, you know, they're surrounded by a bunch of young, impressionable guys who, look, you don't expect, like, Jake DeBrusque isn't going to step up and be a leader. No offense to him, but he's young. Danton Heinen, you know, even Charlie McAvoy, like, you don't expect that those guys are going to be vocal guys in the room. You expect that they're going to be more along for the ride. And so with a younger team and the same leadership, it has been it's been night and day compared to what we had here in the past few years.
It has. And like, as much as the leaders are important in the room, like I said, a team takes a lot of its cues from the coach and a lot of its direction that it's going and a lot of its approach towards things that happen during the season. I think a lot of that comes from the message the coach is giving the team, and you pick up on a lot of different things when that happens. And Bruce Cassidy kind of just brushes that stuff off when you ask him. I mean, he's not going to lie to you. He'll admit, yeah, there's injuries going on right now, but that's it, you know, and you keep going on. And at times, Claude Julien would try to do that. Like, you could tell he was trying to fight using it as an excuse. But in moments of high stress, after a tough loss, you know, when he really felt like he was kind of getting pushed into a corner a little bit, he would start wheeling out the excuses, and you would hear it. And, you know, it was always on the players. It was never on the coaching staff. Where you've got all these injuries, we're not a very good team right now. You know, look at all the people that we're missing, things like that. You would start to hear that kind of stuff. And when you hear that stuff as a player, you definitely pick up on it and say, oh, yeah, look at all that's happening to us right now. We'll be lucky to win. We shouldn't be. We're not expected to win right now. And once that message starts to really permeate and get in there, it's impossible to get out until you have a change and you have a different voice and you have a different message and approach to all that kind of different stuff that happens. And, you know, the proof is in the pudding. The way that they've responded to the adversity this year and just the overwhelming one-loss record since Bruce Cassidy has taken over with the same players, it speaks volumes as to what the right approach was for this team and what was the difference maker for this season in a big way. And you know, I hope that's why, and it still has not been the case to this point, and the hype machine for Jack Adams for Bruce Cassidy has not been there like you hope it would be, obviously because Gerard Gallant's probably going to win in Vegas. But you would hope it starts to kick up a little bit because it's an amazing coaching job that Bruce Cassidy has done.
Yeah. I mean, the expectations at the beginning of the season for this team. I talk about this all the time. Expectations were, they're a playoff team.
About the same
right?
as last year.
They're a playoff team.
Maybe a little
they can
better.
Get in there, you know,
get to the second round. Third
or fourth, you know, in the division, yeah. And they'll get into the playoffs, and we'll see if they can make any noise when they get there, and hopefully the guys improve as the season goes on.
Figure
the
it's
young
more
guys.
Of a developmental year
exactly.
because these young guys coming in, sure.
Exactly. And, you know, instead they've been one of the best teams in hockey since mid-November. I mean, that's it's astonishing where
nice,
this team
nice
has come.
Nice little treat for everybody, Ray.
And then add on the cherry on top here in the last week of Ryan Donato. We'll talk a lot about him this morning, but for him to come out at home.
That's a wicked smart cherry.
Oh, right. at home on Monday night, you know, family, friends, everybody in the luxury box the other night, dad's there, and gets a sweet first goal in his first game. 4 points in the first two games, 2 goals. I mean, is this kid what we thought he was? There's a lot of hype around him coming out of the Olympics. Is he as good as we thought he was, or is this just, you know, the adrenaline of the first few games in the NHL?
Yeah, I still need more games to watch him to decide that. I mean, obviously, he's got skill. There's no question about that. He's got the willingness to go to the tough areas, at least he does right now, and it's going to be interesting to see if he continues to do that as he gets really pounded, because he's going to, you know, in these late season games and in the playoffs. He's going to get hammered pretty good. You saw it happen the other night. He got hit pretty hard midway through that game, and I thought he was a little quieter after that. And, you know, that's the kind of stuff now that he's going to have to fight through and continue to prove that he can do it on a nightly basis when you get up against big, tough, strong, fast opponents, faster, tougher, stronger, bigger than you've ever faced before. You know, that's the kind of stuff he's going to have to continue to show it. But, like, the early returns, obviously the skill is there. Obviously the knack for scoring goals is there.
He's around the net a lot.
He was willing to go to the net and stay there and get into the danger areas. You know, like, there seems to be a knack for it that a lot of the really good players have. And, you know, now it's just about proving he can do it on a nightly basis. And, you know, he's already made more of an impact than I thought he was going to make this year. I wasn't sure he was going to be ready until I saw him in an NHL uniform doing it. And now I say, okay, he's better than I thought he was, but there's still a question as to exactly how good he's going to be.
Well,
it wouldn't surprise me at all if he ends up next to David Krejci through this entire play.
Well, and we're going to talk about that later, because a lot of people this week have been playing the what's the lineup look like when everybody's healthy, and you have to find a spot for this kid right now.
Mm-hmm.
You have to. So we'll get into more of that coming up this morning. Obviously, your calls are welcome at 617-779-0985. We're going to check in with Bob Beers and Judd Surratt, who are in Minnesota for the game tomorrow night. They traveled overnight, so we'll get in some of their thoughts. And Billy Jaffe's going to join us coming up in about 20 minutes as well. He's working some college games this week, so we'll get him in early because he's got a 1 o'clock face-off out in Worcester today. So lots to get to here.
Welcome
on this
to
edition
Worcester
of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show with Ryan Johnston, Judd Zerah, and Bob Beers on the home of the Bees. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show with you until 11 o'clock here from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Ryan Johnston joined in studio today by Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston, and now joined on the phones as well by Bob Beers, color analyst for the Bruins Radio Network, who is in Minnesota. Bruins and the Wild tomorrow night. Morning, Beersy.
Morning, guys. How are we doing today?
Good. Travels go okay last night?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Not too much trouble.
I'm sure it was, again, a lot of fun to be around this team after that game. I mean, they again, find a way when, you know, most teams would be maybe buried down 2-0 going into the third against a team that's hungry to try to clinch a playoff spot, and the Bruins find a way time in and time out.
Dallas, I'll tell you, man, you could just have that body language by them after that game was over was not good. That was, they know how important that was, and to let points like that slip away and not even to get to overtime for them. But for the Bruins, you know, it was actually a different feeling than the game, that was in Carolina a couple weeks ago, or maybe a week and a half ago, whatever it was. You know, that game, the Bruins had nothing going in the first couple of periods, and all of a sudden, the third period, they turned it on and won. But this one was different. You know, the Bruins had something going. It was, you know, they put some pressure on Lettinen, they put some pressure on Dallas in the second period. Anyhow, that's when it got better for them. They had some good chances. The power plays looked decent, and they had a couple of good looks, especially from Pastrnak in the left wing circle, and Krejci had a good look from also the left wing circle. But you know, they weren't getting any puck luck down around the net. They weren't able to put anything behind Lettinen, who was basically the backup goaltender for Dallas. And you know, it was kind of demoralizing. And then all of a sudden, the goal by Ben late in the second, that could have gone the other way in a hurry for the Bruins, but yet they come out in the third, they find a way, just like you said, and it was a really good feeling. You know, the game after the Carolina game, there was almost like a little embarrassed look on their face, like, how do we do that? But this game was like, you know, they felt really good about their effort, and the way that they accomplished it in the third period was great. So yeah, they're feeling pretty good, but they're pretty businesslike. You know, it's, you know, like, all right, you know, we won that one, let's move on to the next one type of thing. But they did enjoy it for a little while yesterday.
Bearsy, how are they doing this? 9-2-2 since Bergeron went down. We talked all year about how tough the month of March was going to be, and they're 8-2-2 so far, and you know, missing 7-8 regulars in the lineup. How have they been able to do this time around with all these other teams fighting for playoff spots?
It's a mentality. I think that it's a mentality that's been instilled in them this season. You know, they got some valuable experience early in the year, not to this extent where they were missing this many guys and this many good players. But they got a taste of it early in the year. And then as the season has gone on, they gelled, they came together. They really play hard for one another. I don't want to go over the top with it, but there's a real feeling with the team that they can, you know, it just doesn't matter. And look, they're not going to be able to win playoff series with the team that they have right now. We all know that. They've got to get healthy. But the mentality, the attitude, the never quit, the workmanlike way that they do, that they go about their job has been pretty impressive. And, you know, the resiliency is the one thing that's always used, the word that's used around them. But it's hard to kind of put a finger on exactly what it is, but they want to play hard for one another. And they battle. That's the identity that they forge for themselves. And whether they've got everybody in the lineup or they've got all these guys out of the lineup, you know, they have that workmanlike mentality game in and game out. And then when you get everybody back in, they're that much better because of it.
Beers, Ryan Donato joins the team on Monday. He's, you know, still going to classes this week, which a lot of people had some fun with. But, you know, scores goals in his first two games. What have you thought about the kid over the course of his first week with the team?
Well, he's getting a real quick study in, you know, how how the game is played and how you get time and space taken away quickly against some of these central teams. You know, like Dallas checked them hard, St. Louis checked them hard. And not when I say that, you know, they didn't run through him. You know, they, you know, he didn't take any huge hits that I can remember. But just, you know, they were on him pretty quick. And, you know, he kind of burst on the scene with that first game, so they weren't going to let, you know, they weren't going to let him get loose and burn him. He's still at the post last night. He's still around the net. But, you know, I think he's learning pretty quick that is a tough league. And, you know, to bring it night in, night out, you're going to play in games some, you know, more frequent now. And there's some tighter checking going on and some bigger guys. You know, you're playing against men now. So it's a bit of an eye-opener for him, I think, a little bit. But in the same token, I mean, he's done well. I mean, look at what he did the first couple of games. You know, it didn't take him much to be able to pounce on a loose puck in St. Louis and score that, you know, nice break for him, but he was able to finish it. Certainly great at TD Garden the first night. That was awesome to see. He's got some work to do, and he's three games in now, and he's still got a couple of tough games coming up on this trip, Minnesota and Winnipeg, where he'll continue to see tough competition. And it's a good way to jump in with both feet, right? And figure it out quick. I think that line was effective yesterday. Thought that they generated some good chances. Danton Heinen has really come back to life to where he was earlier in the season, and that's really helped him. And I think it's energized David Krejci. And, you know, that's, I think Ryan will continue to learn and continue to get better as he goes along, but it's also not going to be like the first night every night. So, you know, it's something he's going to have to figure out too.
You, sensing any extra or more frustration than has been going on with Brad Marchand after he doesn't get another call last night when Jamie Benn pulls like a Jimmy Superfly Snuka, jumps off his skates and, you know, jumps on top of him when he's facing the boards there? It seemed like it should have been a no-doubt penalty to me.
Yeah, Ben, he knew exactly what he was doing there. He had him lined up pretty good. And, you know, they were trying to be tough on him all night, which teams are going to do anyhow, right? I mean, that's what they're going to try to do about with Marchand, which makes it even more impressive what he did in the third period, by the way.
Yep.
I sensed some frustration. I mean, we had him on after the game, and, you know, I think Judd asked him the question, something like, you know, was it more rewarding or satisfying for you, given, you know, the hit that you took there in the third period, that you were able to, you know, be a big part of the comeback and you guys were able to win? You know, and he didn't ask him about the hit itself, but he referenced it in our interview, and he said he felt like, you know, there was a lot of head there. So, yeah, there's probably some frustration on his part. He's gonna get that special attention, and, you know, it's at that time of the game. I know McQuaid went over and kind of went after Ben a little bit, but there's 7 minutes to go. It's 2-2. You know, Ben's not going to drop the gloves. He doesn't want to be put himself in the box in an important game like that.
Yep.
So there's not a whole lot you can do right at that point in the game, but. Yeah, to answer your question, sure, I sense a little frustration in his part, but to be able to do what he did there in the last shift is the best way to get him back.
Bob Beers joining us from Minnesota, where the Bruins will take on the Wild tomorrow. You mentioned two games left on this road trip, Beersy in Minnesota and Winnipeg. And, you know, what do you expect? I mean, obviously the Bruins hopefully getting a little healthier. Patrice Bergeron, you know, the possibility that maybe he's back tomorrow or, you know, or Tuesday at the latest, as he's been skating now. What do you expect here over the rest of this road trip from those two games, not just from the Bruins perspective, but from those from the Wild and from the Jets?
Yeah, also Torrey, I hope to get Torrey back as well. He skated yesterday and he was a little bit closer to playing. So hopefully that's a goal here for tomorrow. Well, I mean, two different kind of games, I think, with Minnesota. And Minnesota actually plays tonight. They play Nashville here tonight, so we'll get a good look at them in their game later today. But, you know, they're both teams seem like they're in playoff spots. So it's a little bit different than St. Louis and Dallas in that spot. I mean, just Winnipeg certainly is. But they both, you know, when the Bruins come to town, doesn't matter who's in their lineup, I think that teams are using that as a bit of a, you know, that measuring stick, if you will. And especially teams out west where you don't see them that often. I know that Winnipeg, well, Winnipeg's going to be in their home rank, and, you know, they're a big, strong team. I'm looking forward to seeing that game and what they look like up there. Minnesota's, you know, they've had a good year in it, but they've been on a good run the second half, it seems like, in order to get there. And it seems like they put themselves comfortably in. So impressive team with them. I think that they're a little bit more, they're a little deeper than they have been maybe in the past, Minnesota is. So, and Eric Staal's having an unbelievable season with the 39 goals that he's had. So this is a really good test for Boston. We knew that this would be. The Central Division is a tough division. Now you got two of the teams in second and third place in that Central Division to go against. So huge, huge challenge. Hopefully the Bruins start to get a little healthier. I don't know what the status is. I haven't talked to anybody with guys back home and if they're skating or not. Maybe you guys can enlighten me on that one, but other than Bergie. But hopefully, you know, things go well and they get the green light to go at least tomorrow, maybe not, and if not, then on Tuesday, or Monday, I should say.
All right, Beersy, we appreciate the time and enjoy the rest of the trip.
All right, guys, thanks very much.
Minnesota is beautiful this time of year. I can
attest
to that.
Say, going from Dallas to Minnesota, that's a tough transition.
You generally want to go from north to south if you're making a trip like that, as opposed to getting on the plane in Texas and winding up in Minnesota.
Yeah, go into the hinterlands of Minnesota and Winnipeg, Manitoba. Good luck.
All right, Tim McCone's going to give us Sports Hub headlines. It's Ryan Johnston and Joe Haggerty with you on the Hockey Show, and we will be joined by Billy Jaffe to talk about some of what's going on around the league coming up next as well. Stick around. It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston joined by Joe Haggerty, NBC Sports Boston. We're going to go right back to the phones and welcome in Billy Jaffe, who normally joins us an hour later than this. But a very busy weekend for Mr. Jaffe, working the NCAA regionals out in Worcester this weekend, including a 1 o'clock face-off today, Billy.
Yes, you're right. Good morning. Hello, eggs and bacon for breakfast and pregame. It's outstanding. Actually, I'm having fruit and yogurt. I'm old and can't do the other stuff.
You're a continental breakfast kind of guy at this point, Jeff.
Yeah, I'm with you, eggs. What's going on, fellas?
Nothing. You got to be excited. You got Michigan in your bracket.
Yes, if the fight song comes out in the first period, forgive me. No, you know what? Here's the issue that I've got. My wife went to Northeastern.
Oh.
I went to Michigan. I'm trying to decide if it's more important to keep harmony in the house or let it out. I didn't exactly have the most glorious career, so maybe the house will win on this one. But I'm all kidding aside, I'm thrilled for this region because, we've got the first game, Cornell and BU. And, besides knowing BU, I know Cornell very well, too. I've known the head coach there, Mike Schaefer, for a while. Those are big hockey schools, and they're big rivals. They don't like each other. Then you've got Michigan Northeastern, who are not big rivals, but those are big-name hockey schools, too. I think this is the best region of the four, and I can't wait, really. I just love calling the games, and it's going to be a great time.
Yeah. After taking on Judd as a roommate for the year there, Billy, you might want to do a solid for the wife and root a little bit for Northeastern. That might be a good move.
Had she's loved having Judd there, I think, more than me. They can talk. He makes martinis. I've actually learned to like martinis because Judd's good at it. She loves it. I don't know. I don't think this will become permanent, but I think she can enjoy it. The kids have their Manny there on Friday nights. He hand rolls pizza out, pizza dough for them and everything. It's been, it's not Bob Saget full house, but it sure feels close to it right now. I'm going to tell you this, and I know we're going to get to pro, but let me just throw a few things out there real quick, RJ, if you don't mind.
Yeah, go ahead.
There's a player on Michigan, and I am not saying that he's the next one because he's far, far, far away. His name is Jack Becker. He's a late round draft pick a few years ago. And do these games, you learn about him and everything. He's 6'3", 200, and he's not done growing. I'm not telling you he's even going to be an NHLer, but by watching him and by studying, watching film and everything and talking to the Michigan coaches, they think the Bruins may have gotten a steal late. Now, coaches like to promote their own, but I've known these guys really well. They're not going to BS me. They're like, he's got 4 years here, but think Zach Hyman-like. Could he be a Mike Knuba-like, who, by the way, only had 7 goals his freshman year at Michigan? So it's that he's that big. He's the hardest worker out there. He unbelievable teammate, they say. If there's Bruin fans that are in the area, come on by. And then you have a little rooting interest, perhaps, in a guy like Becker. And he wears number 8. That's my favorite number, so I like him, too.
Interesting. And look, we know that the Bruins have done a pretty good job of finding talent, whether it be college, juniors, or the like. But
that was high school when they drafted him,
right?
Minnesota High School. That's a good, good scouting job.
So they've done a really good job with that. And while we're on the topic of some of the guys who have made that leap, I'll ask you, because it's been certainly a topic of conversation here over the first half hour. What have you thought of Ryan Donato's first few games?
It's hard not to be, enamored with it. I don't want to say unexpected. I'm not talking about the number of goals. Who the heck knows, right? You know, what's he going to do? But when it's all said and done, what did we know about him? I've done a few of his games, gone to a bunch too, and watched him like everybody else. But we know that he is beyond hungry for the puck. We know that it's the old hockey cliche, right, fellas? The puck finds him. The puck can't find you until you get your backside to certain areas. And by his willingness to do that at all levels, and his ability to play both center and wing, he's comfortable in all areas of the ice. It's a big difference than guys that have to transition to one and get comfortable. He is already comfortable in both areas. RJ, I've loved his game. Has a long stick, so he gets to a lot of things too. I'm not telling you it's all going to be rose petals for Ryan here, but right now, it's dream come true, using his words. It's like a dream scenario out there, because he's busting his ass. He's making sure he's doing the things the right way. He's listening. And because of the injuries, he's playing with certain players that also will help his game. And so you love it. You think it's a great story. You know, I know Joe's talked to him in the past, too, and everything. This is where he wanted to be all along.
Yep.
I've talked to Teddy about it, too, and that's important. And so he's all in. And I love the fact that, you know, he's very mature. You know, we think he's a rookie, and he is a rookie, obviously. But growing up in the household of pro players and being in the environment and then being a year older, taking an extra year of prep school and everything, that helps an awful lot for a kid stepping in.
Billy, when you look at where the Bruins are right now, facing potentially the Leafs in the first round as we kind of, you know, prognosticate out for the playoff matchups, do you feel like they, you know, as they continue to win here, they'd be better off trying to pass the Lightning and potentially get that one seed to play somebody else? Or are you comfortable enough if they do end up playing a Leafs team that they've had a tough matchup with in the first round?
All right. Well, first thing, Joe, I don't want them to put their mindset to where they have to beat out Tampa.
Yep.
All right. And I don't think they do, because I don't want them to be, even if it's minimal, I don't want them to have any disappointment whatsoever heading into the playoffs.
But they might do it if they just keep on damn winning like they are right now. It's ridiculous.
Right. So that's different, though, right?
Yep.
Saying our goal is this versus this is what happened. I hate this word because it was the word of last year. It would happen organically. I'll say it anyways because it sounds good for radio. Organically, right? It would just happen. I don't want them to have to put it out there and saying, this is our goal. Because if you don't achieve your goal, even though it's a long season, you know, and then you got to overcome it. So we'll work past that. If you're asking me, are they a better matchup with Toronto than they are with, it's either, you know, Jersey or Florida. I'm comfortable, Joe. Hags, I'm comfortable with them going against anybody right now. I am. You know, we all say, and actually, let me rephrase it. I say, I know other people have, but I won't speak for them. You know, the speed teams, the real darting around teams, like a New Jersey, fear. You know, put some fear in the Bruins, or at least put the fear in the people watching the Bruins. Yeah, I think there's some validity to it. But I don't know. I mean, I'm more concerned about hot goalie come playoff time. I'm concerned about this team come playoff time if they're healthy. I can't believe that I go into the playoffs being worried about anybody else if, big capital I, capital F, Joe, if they're healthy.
Billy Jaffe is joining us, and of course you can see him as part of Nesson's coverage of Bruins hockey, and also today, where are you? Are you ESPN3 today?
No, today's ESPN News for both games, so you can get us in... You can actually get us in high def, believe it or not.
Very nice.
Instead of standard def. Yeah, I don't know if that's good for people seeing me in high def. But it's high def. And then tomorrow, the championship game is ESPN2.
ESPN2, even better. Yeah. All right. Since you are our resident officiating expert, I got a few issues that have come up this week. First and foremost, the GM meetings this week, one of the big things that came out of that is they're looking at the way that they handle goaltender interference reviews.
Yeah.
It looks like they're going to do everything out of Toronto now, put it in the hands of the folks in Toronto, which will include a retired referee.
Which they should have been doing from the very beginning, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and they want to put that in place no later than the start of the playoffs. Good move?
Not sure. Scary, potentially. I know what they're trying to do. You know, I also think, by the way, that there should be a retired goalie in there with the referee. I do. I really do, because I think that there would be a different opinion. Putting the referee, and I don't mean a bad different opinion, I mean a differing opinion. And despite the fact that our world doesn't like to hear differing opinions anymore, I think this would be a good place for it. Now, maybe it would make the reviews go too long. Maybe that's why I don't want it. But the referee in there had to happen, because otherwise the referees on the ice would never have agreed to it. There's no way that they would have. I think if you ask most referees now, they would like to get rid of replay in totality. And I think that here's the thing. The people in Toronto oftentimes see things differently than the guys on the ice. So I don't know if we've just shifted the decision to an area where maybe we even get less clarity, or maybe in a perfect world, we just get more consistency. I don't know, but if it's a good thing yet or not, because I haven't seen it implemented. If it's clean, if it's quicker, and if it's consistent, it's better. If we continue to live in a gray matter world of it, no, it's not better, because now we've removed it from on the ice totally, and now we're like, okay, we're being watched by Big Brother.
Well, but you mentioned the word consistent, and that's what they're going for, right? Is that if we put the decision in the hands of the same people all the time, as opposed to whoever happens to be officiating the game that night, that should make it more consistent across the league.
But, Ryan, you're assuming that it's the same exact people in the booth every night in Toronto. And while playoffs, they will be there. I mean, it's a bunker mentality for about 2 months, you know, especially the first two rounds. It's amazing that the hamster wheel that those people work on. But, you know, I mean, you're assuming it's the same person reviewing each one. You know, is it going to be Colin Campbell? Is it going to be Chris King? Is it going to be Murph? You know, who knows? My point is, you can still get a differing of opinion. The thing that was that was interesting, and interesting might be the wrong word, fellas, for the reviews originally, is when the referees were doing it, there were certain referees that were, I thought that they wouldn't take insight or advice from the people in Toronto. It's that they were perhaps more veteran officials that ruled on their own, and I think that there were probably some younger officials that took some insight or advice from people in Toronto when they saw it differently. And maybe that influenced the younger official, perhaps. And this is not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that. I just think that too many opinions. So maybe this just helps. Maybe this helps to go to one area. I just don't know yet. I need to see it implemented, guys.
All right, before we wrap up with you, I want to ask you about a Bruins-related officiating question that came up this week, and that's the hit by Braden Schenn on David Krejci. No supplementary discipline. He gets a minor penalty. Look, obviously Bruins fans are very touchy about these subjects right now, considering what they just have gone through with David Backes.
And that's the whole
some
issue.
Of the other things. The some of the issue, other things that have come up this
the whole
this
issue
year.
Was the David Backes suspension and the fact that he gets suspended for the hit that he had. And that
those are two different hits.
Totally,
two different plays.
100%.
Yeah. So I get it. The Bruins fans are frustrated. I thought at first. I'm a proponent of, we got to be even more. How's this for hypocritical? More of a big proponent of harder on head hits. Okay. Yet on the other hand, are those, we can't take them all out of the game. It's this quandary that I'm stuck in. I've said it before to you, RJ, and maybe you too, Joe.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we love about our game is that it has this unbelievable speed and this not threat, but this potential of violent impact, right? And violent impact is what attracts a lot of people to the game. Same thing with football. It does. It just, that doesn't mean you do it maliciously, but it's going to happen. And I think it's just part of the inherent risk in the job. I went over that and over it and over that. Did Krejci actually duck his head? No. Did he come? Is he in a posture where his body is lower, which brings the head a little lower? I think so. They do, just a little bit. At first, I thought, I'm like, you know, it should be a suspension. I don't like it. I don't know if it's going to be a suspension. I told it to numerous people. I don't know if it's going to be because of David's head, meaning, and the unavoidable contact. I'm sure you guys have talked about this already on the show, so sorry if I'm repeating it. But anyways, I kept watching it, and I looked at some others, and I'm like, you know, if we take that hit out of the game, what's next? What's next? It's a quandary, RJ. It is. It's a quandary, but I do think that it's incredibly different than David's hit against his suspension against Detroit. And yet the league also thought, this I didn't get, though. I'll finish with this. I didn't think it was, they said to me that they thought it was kind of similar to the Trocheck hit when Backus hit him and didn't get supplemental discipline. I didn't think that was agreeable. That didn't sit with me at all because Backus got 90% of the body. I don't even know if he caught head.
Right.
Now, this was, and the other hit they mentioned when I talked to them was the Hornquist Charlie McAvoy hit, which I thought it was much more similar to.
Yeah, it was more similar.
Yeah. But he did not leave his skates before contact, so it wasn't.
No.
It wasn't charging.
It wasn't late.
No, it was not late. It was. Krejci was definitely crouched down when he hit him, and this was one of the more difficult decisions for Department of Player Safety. They spent a lot of time deliberating and discussing because I think there was a lot of people coming from different angles and wanting to talk about it because it was a hard choice to make because it was such a violent hit. But, you know, no injury as well, that certainly played into it a little bit. And when you shake all of that up together and come out, you know, no suspension. I agree with you, Billy. There's got to be some level of physicality and also some level of responsibility on the guy getting hit if he's crouched down and if he's got his head down for most of the time and then he just sees it at the last minute.
Yeah, I don't think David had his head down. I don't. I think he had his body come down.
Not at the time he was hit, but before that. He just saw it at the last minute. He kind of had his head down looking at the puck, and then he looked up at the last minute.
It in Super Trooper duper slow-mo, right? So he's turning out of the corner and his body's down. I agree. His body was down. I don't think I'm really splitting hairs. I'm saying when we say crouch, it's almost like people think of a guy kind of really getting low. I think David was just a little lower.
Yeah,
but he was lower, and he didn't duck his head either. It was on the same plane, but his meaning he didn't drop his head per se when the hit came. But regardless of that, I think we're all in agreement, or at least Joe, you and I are in agreement. It was a marginal hit. Yes, the league struggled with it. It was not a unanimous decision on that one. The question became, the big question, was he in a vulnerable spot? Now, not that that is the overriding. The first thing is principal point of contact. That's the first thing. But then was he in a vulnerable spot? You know, some people I was talking to felt he was coming in the corner. He was on his backhand. He was turning into an area where the player, Shen, knew he had nowhere else to go. I can't think that quickly off the ice, let alone in a game on the ice. When I'm driving the wall, if I'm forechecking and I see the play flush up the wall, I'm coming in along the wall and making sure that the guy can't beat me to the inside. And if he's going to hit, I'm going to try and drive him into the wall. I think that's what Shen was thinking. He did catch him in the head, but it was on that line of unavoidable. It was.
All right, we'll get to go on that, Billy. We appreciate the time. Enjoy the games this weekend.
All right, gentlemen, have a great day.
There's Billy Jaffe. Again, you can see him ESPN News, ESPN2 this
Ocho.
Weekend.
Is he going to be on the Ocho?
For the college hockey regionals. He's got, who do you say, Cornell and BU is the first game today, and Northeastern and Michigan. And you can watch watch Billy's head literally fly apart
during that game today. Angry text messages from his wife if Northeastern's losing.
All right, we got lots to come. Still another hour to go here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show, including Judd Surratt, who will join us coming up from Minnesota as well. It's Ryan Johnston and Joe Haggerty with you until 11 o'clock.
You're listening to the Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston and Joe Haggerty with you until 11 o'clock. Just as a quick aside, how about Daron Harmon pulling the Midnight Express here as he's going to wind up in a Costa Rican prison? We're never going to see him again. 2 ounces of weed in an Arizona iced tea can.
Guy just wants to smoke some weed and go surfing in Costa Rica.
You would think if you were going to Costa Rica, you'd probably find a local source down there.
Probably.
But, you know, all right. We've got lots more to get to, and we can get your calls in as well in this hour at 617-779-0985. Judd Surratt's going to join us coming up in about 15, 20 minutes. We'll get to him out in Minnesota where the Bruins take on the Wild. Bruins coming off a win over Dallas last night. Dramatic, come from behind, 3 goals in the last in the third period. To beat the Stars 3-2, we heard
40 saves. By the way, season high for Tuukka Rask. Let me put that out there for all the people that think I absolutely hate Tuukka Rask and have something personal against him. He was fantastic last night, and the kind of thing you really wanted to see late in the season from him as you head down the stretch towards the playoffs.
And there were some good saves in there too. I mean, Dallas had some good scoring chances that they couldn't convert on last night. we've talked a little bit, or we've talked a fair amount about Ryan Donato, obviously, with his first week in the NHL, has been a very eventful one. In addition to that, he also had to fly out separately from the team because, you know, hey, classes and everything. I respect that. I respect that. And look, if he's got the team's okay to do that,
which worked out ahead of time.
Yes. Yeah, this was not a surprise. He didn't call them up on Tuesday morning and say, by the way, I'm going to meet you guys in St. Louis because I got a test today. Look, his, you know, Harvard education's not a bad thing to have. And when you've spent, you know, the time that he has there and you've got a little bit of semester left, if you got to miss a practice here and there, I'm going to be okay with
it. And
that.
Shocking, Harvard University might take academics seriously and might
really
require you to actually go to classes and finish it out in good standing if you want to, you know, graduate normally like you would have otherwise or have a chance, you know, to do it on time. They're not going to let you just like take off and say, I'm going to go play hockey without finishing things up. I mean, this is a very obvious thing to me that clearly it was important to him. Clearly it's important to the family. Clearly it's something they discussed with the Bruins ahead of time and figured out like a schedule or a way that it was going to work for everybody involved where maybe he's going to miss a practice here or there, but he's certainly not going to miss games. And as long as that's the case and everybody's cool with it, I don't see why anybody else would have an issue with it. And for me, it speaks to the kid's maturity and his desire to fulfill a commitment he either made to his parents or to the school or whoever. To, you know, finish up, to get his degree, and to want that piece of paper from Harvard. And I think it speaks to the kid, you know, as much as anything else, and his desire to do the right thing. I mean, you didn't hear that. It, to each his own, every kid is different. You didn't hear that kind of, like, stern, solemn commitment from Charlie McAvoy when he left BU. He's like, yeah, I'll go back and get my degree eventually. But it wasn't like he was hell-bent on it.
Well, that's what I think a lot of people look at it and say, well, yeah, you got your whole rest of your life to do that. Right. And you do.
Yes.
But you've also put in like 3/4 of a year and you don't want to lose the work that you put in this semester and have to go back and retake those classes because you couldn't stick around for the last month because you had to go off and play hockey. So,
and I think he mentioned to me he wants to graduate on time and he's going back in the summertime to take classes. Like, he's serious about it. And as long as he's, you know, committed to it and he's found a way to get it done and it's going to be minimal impact to the Bruins, go for it.
Look, if he wants to study in his hotel room during a road trip, that's fine. I'd rather he be doing that than other things that 22-year-olds would be doing.
Absolutely. And for the most part, it's going to be optional practices for the Bruins anyway from here on out because of the schedule that they're in. It's not like they're going to be having, you know, hour-and-a-half marathon practices where you're working on everything and he's going to be missing a ton.
Yeah. After today, 9 games to go in 15 days on the regular season schedule.
Not a lot of practice time you're
going to
get in there.
Not a lot of practices going on.
No.
All right. Just to go back quickly because Maria wants to bring this up. So I want to get our thoughts on it. Billy Jaffe was talking about the Braden Schenn hit on David Krejci. We kept the conversation going here during the last break.
Yep.
My take on it is this, that I'm uncomfortable with the way that the league is handling these things because, once again, it seems like they're legislating based on injury. If David Krejci had been injured on that exact same hit, Braden Schenn would have been suspended. And I think that's the wrong way to go, and it's not the way that they're supposed to be judging these things. The process is supposed to be they look at the hit. They determine, is it a suspendable hit? If they say no, process over. If they say yes, then they look at, did it cause injury? Do you have a history? All of that. So if I do believe if David Krejci gets hurt on that play, then it's a suspension. The same way David Backes gets a suspension because Nielsen gets hurt on that play, right? They're two different hits, and I get there's different circumstances involved, but I look at it and say the league is going about this the wrong way. They're looking at the result of the hit before they look at the hit itself.
Well, I think in that particular case, the Schenn Krejci hit, they did look at the hit, and I think they were on the fence, and I think it was very difficult for them. And I think there were people among the discussion, the group in player safety, some that felt it was suspendable and some that didn't. And there wasn't a lot of, you know, harmonic convergence like there is on almost every other hit. This was very unique in the amount of time it took them to make the decision. Usually
by the next morning after it happens. They know what they're going to do, and they're moving forward with their plan. So, you know, in that particular instance where it's that difficult for them to come to a decision and you know, decide finally if it's going to be suspendable or not, I think an injury probably would put it over the top and be the final straw that would say, you know what, yes, it is going to be a suspension. And I think it's unique in that circumstance because I don't think most of the time that's how they judge it. Most of the time, and this is what I was told about the Backus suspension, it was two games right off the bat for the hit to the head, and then it was an extra game for the concussion that it caused. And that's kind of how they are supposed to
rule. Well, and that's the way it's supposed to work.
Exactly.
Yes.
The injury causes more punishment, not necessarily is the cause of the punishment in the first place. But we live in a world, if you watch what's going on with the Department of Player Safety and you watch what's going on with the NHL and you watch how much concussions are talked about, clearly there is some response to when a concussion is caused. And it puts up the radar for the league as far as the suspensions go, you know, much more than it they say it should. But that's just the way it is. At a certain point when the league says this is the way we're doing it, but they're actually doing it another way, I think you can continue to complain that they're doing it that way and that this is not the way you're supposed to be doing it, or you kind of accept it and say, okay, this is what the league is doing, and you move on from there. I've already accepted that when there's a concussion involved, they're going to be looking much more closely at it for a number of different reasons, and that's just the way it is. And you know, that's just the simple truth of it.
Yeah, I just and look, a lot's been made out of where's Krejci's head on the play and all of that. I get it. And you mentioned the McAvoy-Hornquist play from a few weeks ago, you know, similar type play. Although in that scenario, I look at McAvoy, he's kind of reaching out for the puck. Krejci's head isn't dipping as Shen's coming to. I mean, there's a lot that kind of enters into these things.
Right. But he's at chest level.
What I'm looking.
My problem is Shen's going in for a hit. Where is he going to hit on Krejci's body if his head is down by his chest?
Well,
I mean, there's nowhere he can really go.
What I'm looking for more than anything else, and this came up in the conversation about goaltender interference, is consistency. If these calls are consistent so that guys know if you throw a hit like this, you're getting suspended. You know, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it, then that's fine. But there's still questions. Every time there's a hit like this, we go, all right, are they going to suspend him or not? Mm-hmm. And sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. And that to me, is where it gets frustrating because I feel like there's an inconsistency.
I think I've got a good bead on them, but I will admit the David Backus suspension still surprised me. That was a tough one.
Maria in Watertown is up first here on this hour of the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Good morning, Maria.
Hey, guys. How are you today?
Good. Hey, Maria.
Joe, it's nice to talk to you, my friend. Hope all is well.
It is. Hope all is well with you is also.
Well, let's see at the end of this call what you guys say about that, because you set the table for me. The first thing I want to do is I want to say thank you to the Bruins for clinching a playoff spot sooner rather than later, as opposed to past seasons where we're biting our fingernails and waiting until the last day of the season. So kudos to them and the coaching staff for punching their ticket as early as they did. And second thing quickly I want to say is if there's a silver lining to Chara's injury, it's watching Brandon Carlo progress and play with some aggressiveness. I loved watching him clean some bodies out in front of the net last night, and I'd love to see him do more of that, which I think would be hugely beneficial come playoff time. Now let me get to the NHL officiating and Department of Player Safety. First of all, I'd like to educate the NHL referees on what their job is. Their job is to enforce the rules of the game and maintain order on the ice. Which means, gentlemen, you see a penalty, I don't care what color shirt they're wearing or what the name is on the back of the shirt, you make the damn call. I'm tired of watching Brad Marchand and other Bruins players getting treated differently than players from, the Pittsburgh Penguins. Mm-hmm. I'm done with that, okay?
Yep.
You need to call it fair and square because you know what? You insult the intelligence of fans who watch this game when you choose to cherry pick when you're going to make a call. And with regard to the Department of Player Safety, all right, stop with this nonsense. You're not taking hits to the head seriously. Stop cherry picking when you're going to dole out discipline and when you're not going to dole out discipline. A hit to the head is a hit to the head. regardless of whether there's an injury, regardless of who delivered the hit. You can't tell me that if Brad Marchand had delivered the same hit that Braden Schenn delivered on David Krejci, that there wouldn't have been some kind of supplemental discipline. I will go to the mat on that one. And if I'm the Bruins organization, I am just beating the bejesus out of that league office, because this crap has got to stop. It's ruining the integrity of the game at this point.
I appreciate the call, Maria. Let me go back to last night's game. If Brad Marchand hits Jamie Benn the way Jamie Benn hit Brad Marchand last night, do you think there's a penalty on that play?
Of course.
Of course there is.
Look, I wrote a column about this earlier in the week. The league has to start treating Brad Marchand like the superstar that he is, as far as the calls he gets.
How about,
like, you know, the breakaway was what caused me to do it.
Brad Marchand's reputation costs him a penalty shot on that breakaway.
Yes.
And part of that is brought on himself, right? I mean, Brad Marchand just got fined for diving a couple of weeks ago. Part of that is brought on himself. But if Brad Marchand doesn't have the reputation that he's got, he gets a penalty shot on that play.
He does. And I think it's gotten to the point where he's one of the biggest stars in the league. He's up there. Only Alex Ovechkin scored more goals than him over the last 3 years. He's a two-time All-Star. You know, he was mentioned in the Hart Trophy conversation last year. I think, you know, he's on the edge of it this year. He missed too much time, I think, to get in. But he's doing MVP-like things down the stretch for this team again this year. You know, this is a league where the superstars get calls. Sidney Crosby's always gotten calls. The best players get the calls. And he's reached a point where he should be getting those calls, regardless of the other stuff. Look, it's a totally different situation when he's taking a guy's legs out or he's doing something that could hurt somebody and he needs to get suspended. Like, that's fine. That he still does that stuff once in a while. He deserves to be called to the carpet when that happens. But when he has the puck on his stick and guys are attacking him, and, you know, either giving him a bear hug in overtime to neutralize a breakaway shot, or jumping on top of him like Jamie Benn did last night in the third period of that game, that stuff needs to be called. They need to protect their stars. They need to protect the players like Brad Marchand that are putting butts in the seats and making people watch the games. You know, he goes to All-Star Weekend, he gets booed, and he gives the wave to the crowd. That's entertainment. That's the kind of guys the league wants to have and should have and should be protecting to allow to do that stuff during games.
People pay to see
Brad Marchand in overtime.
You got to have a good heel.
So the league needs to do a much better job of calling the penalties that are there when the puck is on Marchand's stick, because they're not doing it right now. And I wouldn't blame Marchand if he's getting pissed off about it, because he's getting a raw deal from the officials right now.
All right, more to come here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Judd Surratt will join us from Minnesota coming up. It is Johnston and Haggerty with you until 11 o'clock.
The Sports Hub Hockey Show on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
98.5 The Sports Hub and the Sports Hub Hockey Show. Ryan Johnston joined in studio this week by Joe Haggerty of NBC Sports Boston. We're with you until 11 o'clock. Let's go back out to the road and up in Minnesota. Judd Surratt is joining us, Bruins and the Wild tomorrow. Good morning, Judd.
Good morning. What's going on, boys? Hags, you got the cargo shorts ready for Winnipeg?
I absolutely do. And Judd, I got to ask you: Are you icing the vocal cords after all these third period comebacks? I don't want to blow you out before the playoffs start. I mean, this is good stuff that you're getting a call on a nightly basis here.
Bring it on, senor. You make the goals, I will call them.
Last night, I mean, down 2-0. We talked with Bob Beers earlier, and you know, down 2-0, and the Bruins had played a decent second period, but going into the third, you know, again, you look at this team and you look at the roster of guys that weren't on the ice last night and kind of wonder, like, how do you have any business coming back and scoring three goals in the third period to win these games? And yet, going into that third period, if you had asked me, you know, do the Bruins have a shot in this game, and say, yeah, have you seen this team over the first 70 whatever games?
Well, a couple of different things. I think, first of all, there's a belief up and down this roster of what this team can accomplish. I was asked the other day, Ryan, I think when I was on in the morning show with Rich and Dan Roach when he was filling in for Freddie, what characteristics does this resemble from the team that I was around for a decade in Chicago? And I think one of them was the belief that there was no obstacle that they could not overcome. And I think the other thing that you also have to remember, even though they are missing 7 impact players from their lineup, and hopefully they'll get maybe one or two back here on Sunday in Minnesota, you've still got a team that has difference makers in the lineup. And a couple of them struck last night in Marchand, Pastrnak. Tuukka Rask, by the way, kept the game in range. He stopped 40 of 42. I think that that bears mentioning. But those guys, the level of play that they've been able to produce, especially without a guy like Bergeron in the lineup, how hard is that? How many wingers around the National Hockey League could produce at the level that you're seeing from Marchand and, to a lesser extent, Pastrnak, without their centerman in the lineup? Those guys were fabulous. And then the last thing, because I happen to run into a scout who used to be on Ken Hitchcock's staff, that he felt that there was a seed of doubt. If the Bruins could get a goal early in the third, which they did, I don't think that Dallas felt safe, and the Bruins were able to capitalize on that.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the guys, you know, as we focus on all of the guys who have been out, some of the guys, the role players who have stepped into bigger roles here over the past few weeks and have managed to keep this thing going as well as they have?
Well, you know, we mentioned Pastrnak and Marchand and the way that they have played. Riley Nash, right in the middle of that, has been incredible. I still think it's a story that has maybe been undercovered to a certain extent when you think about his production. I'm just looking at my notes from last night. With 12 games with Patrice Bergeron out of the lineup, 5 goals, 8 assists, 2 goals on the power play for a guy who's having a career year offensively. But his ability to move up and basically for the Bruins not to miss a beat, that's impressive. Early in the season, and he had talked about this, Bruce Cassidy talked about this, I don't know if he was necessarily ready for that type of opportunity. But his game started to grow as the season progressed, maybe had a little bit more confidence and realized that he could bring a little bit more offense to the table. And because of that, he has fit in seamlessly without Bergeron in the lineup, manning the top line with those two top wingers. I think if you continue to move down the lineup, Danton Heinen's game is trending in the right direction. I think you've gotten a spark from Ryan Donato, who's jumped into the lineup. And your third line, it's sort of been mix and match here because of some of the injuries that you've had in the lineup. But I think Bruce Cassidy, once again, called over his fourth line, Sean Corrali, Schaller, Achari. He said, I need more from you, especially out here in the Western Conference against these teams. And those guys responded.
Yeah, Judd, I didn't realize that you had asked Marshy this last night until Beersy had mentioned it earlier. Sensing some frustration from him that he's not getting some of the calls that a player of his caliber normally gets, whether it was, you know, that breakaway in OT earlier on in the week or last night when Jamie Benn gives him the Superfly Snooker from the top turnbuckle there and kind of jumps on him late in the game.
Good reference.
Thank you. You kind of surprised that the Marshy's not, or you sensing frustration from him that he's not getting those kind of calls?
I don't think it's any more than I think he experienced early in the season. I think the question to Marshy was basically, was the win a little bit sweeter considering the fact that Jamie Benn took a run at you? And then there was a heated visor-to-visor confrontation that was taking place between the benches. And I think he demurred and for the most part said, listen, I felt he got a little bit too much of the head in that instance. And I don't know. I think what's great about Marshy lately is that he has been able to channel some of that frustration. If that's what he's experiencing, he's been able to channel it, and he performed. Because last night he was already playing an effective game, and he elevated that game, Hags.
Yep.
And obviously he was the number one star.
Defensively, you know, again, you've got the top two defensive pairing is out. Both of them combined, I mean, you're missing a lot of minutes there. And some of the guys that have stepped up there, including Kevin Miller, who's been wearing the A on his shoulder. I think he's been playing tremendous. I thought he was excellent in that game against St. Louis on Wednesday night.
Yep.
He's being relied on a whole lot more, and he's stepped up to the challenge. And I, you know what? I think a lot of people, when they signed him to that 4-year contract, we're kind of like, well, really? We're committing to Kevin Miller for 4 years and, you know, $2.5 million. It's looking like that contract's going to turn out to be a bargain at the end of the day.
Kevin Miller's having a career year. And Bob and I had discussed this really over the last couple of games. And Bob had brought up, usually when you talk about a career year, normally you're focused on points. And that isn't necessarily what Kevin's game is about. But it's his ability to move the puck, move his feet, defend, kill plays. He's having a spectacular year. And, Ryan, you had asked about some of the role players. I don't know if I'd necessarily put him as a role player, but one of the guys who is definitely not considered a star player or a name player on the team who's having a fabulous year. I think that his story is very undercovered in some respects. And I also think the pairing of Matt Grizzlick and Kevin Miller, who we didn't anticipate when we were talking about this team in October and November, being as effective as they are, their ability to kill plays, to be aggressive. They don't spend any time in their own zone, and those guys have really worked well together to be able to eliminate time and space and make the Bruins as effective as they are defensively.
How much, Judd, have you bought in on Ryan Donato? Obviously some impressive things he's done three games in, and how much maybe more do you want to kind of see here before he becomes, in your mind, sort of a guy that gets placed into that lineup once the playoffs start?
Pags, I still think that we have a lot to see. The sample size is very, very small. And I think you want to be able to see the overall game. Obviously, you can see the skill. You can see his hockey sense. You can see his ability to shoot the puck. You can see his ability to win some battles. But what I think you want to see, and what I think the Bruins want to see, and the head coach addressed this yesterday when we talked in the pregame show, you want to be able to say that 200-foot game. How does he get pucks out in his own zone? How well does he work along the wall? What is his coverage like? What is his ability to understand when to get plays deep, when to try and make a dish to try and dish it over the line and create some offense? I think those are some of the things that you'll have some greater data on as we go through the rest of the season. He's going to have a lot of games, obviously. I won't say a lot of games, but he'll have a lot of games coming in a short amount of time where you can get a better idea of what he can bring to the table. But if the Bruins get completely healthy, I don't know where everybody fits, and I think the coaching staff is trying to figure that out too. When this team is completely healthy, where does Tommy Wingles fit? Does he fit in your opening lineup on game one of the playoffs? Where's Gianta? Where is a guy like Ryan Donato? Where's a guy like Nick Holden? So I think that those are all things, and that may bear out based on health when game one of the playoffs begins, but assuming that the Bruins are completely healthy, those are some of the things that I think down the stretch that I think a lot of us are going to have our eyes focused on.
All right, Judd, real quick before we let you go, because I don't think we've mentioned it at all this morning, but while we're talking about role players, how about the silky mitts on Timmy Schaller last night on the shorty?
Oh, that was spectacular. What a finish to be able to, you know, go forehand, backhand, and then whip it, you know, right inside the near post. That was spectacular. And to be able to do it in quick fashion, to do it in a play that, you know, some guys might not necessarily have that type of poise. But I remember the coaching staff talking earlier in the season when that line with Sean Corrali and Noel Acciari was really generating a few more headlines, that he's probably the most skilled of the guys that are on that line. He's got a really good shot. I think he's got some decent offensive instincts. He also had some other chances in that game and on the road trip against the St. Louis Blues. And that's a valuable weapon to have, because I think when we think about, listen, these guys are mostly a checking line and an energy line, but you have to have that ability to produce, to put some fear in some opponents and to change the nature of a game. All three of those guys in the line are having career years offensively. That's a big benefit for the Bruins.
Judd, we appreciate you getting up this morning with us, and enjoy the rest of your trip.
You got it, boys. See ya.
There's Judd Surratt from Minnesota, where the Bruins take on the Wild tomorrow night, 7:30 Eastern time start. All right, Tim McCone's got Sports Hub headlines for us, and we will continue. It's Johnston and Haggerty with you, 617-779-0985. We can take your calls right up to 11 o'clock.
This is where Boston talks hockey. The Sports Hub Hockey Show on the home of the Bees, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
617-779-0985. We'll get to as many calls as we can here as we take you up to 11 o'clock. Ryan Johnston and Joe Haggerty. Mentioned this earlier, and Judd kind of brought it up, and so I just wanted to follow through with it.
What, the sickest myths from New Hampshire? Is that what we're going to talk about?
No, not that.
Oh, okay.
But that
was go to Tim Schaller, by
yes.
the way.
Yeah, the Timmy heads must have loved that one last
they were,
night.
They were very active on social media last night, the Timmy heads.
If this team is healthy, assuming everybody is back in time for the playoffs, which are a little more than a couple of weeks away, what does the lineup look like? And I tried to throw mine together this morning, as a lot of people have this week on social media. And I wind up with some of the guys that he mentioned there in the in the last segment. Heinen, Wingles, and Gianta sitting out.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm kind of torn on who's sitting out defensively.
You have Danton Heinen sitting out.
I do.
Mm, okay.
Now he could fix that in the next couple of weeks, as both Bob and Judd said.
He's been playing better lately.
He's turning around.
He has been.
He had gone into a little bit of a rut there.
Yeah, he didn't have the Jake DeBrusque immediate response when he was healthy scratched.
But
it took him a little while to start getting back.
Okay, but here's my question: if he's in, who's out? Because I've got Marchand, Bergeron, Pastrnak, obviously.
Yep.
I've got Krejci with Donato and Rick Nash.
Mm-hmm.
I've got Riley Nash with DeBrusque and Backes on the third line, because mm-hmm. I think DeBrusque, his game fits that third line mentality. And then I've got the fourth line, Schaller, Corrali, and Achari. I'm not breaking them up.
Yeah, I did the exercise as well, and basically my lineup is the same as yours, except I have Danton Heinen in and Schaller out. I think you would have to mix around, or Corrali, and you put Achari in the middle. I think you would have to adjust the fourth line in some way. You know, one of those fourth line guys I think may end up coming out if everybody is healthy. Now,
because those guys they're penalty killer. Like,
yeah,
they're valuable guys.
Totally.
And they've had a great year together for the most part.
They have, but, I think Schaller and Achari are more factors than Corrali is. You know, it's not like Corrali's win a ton of faceoffs. Mm-hmm. He's below 50%. He's certainly a penalty killer. He's a big body. You know, there are some things he brings to the table. But I think you can replace some of what he's bringing, assuming that a guy like Achari could step into the middle, which they've played him a little bit there lately. So clearly they're looking at him and saying, is this a guy that could be an option at center in the playoffs? I just think, given what Heinen has done all year, I'm not going to sit him because I don't want to touch the fourth line. I wouldn't do that. Would Bruce Cassidy do that? I don't know. I think he's got some affection and some appreciation for that fourth line. He likes what they've done all year, and it's probably going to be difficult for him to bust them up. All this being said, the sense I get with Jake DeBrusque is that there is question as to when he's going to come back, if it's going to be anytime soon.
Right.
So this may be a decision that you don't have to make. You know, this is all in theory right now. And I do think, just given the amount of games that they're playing, they're not going to be 100% healthy going into the playoffs. So it's not going to become the Sophie's choice with all these players, because they're not going to have every one of them as a healthy option.
All right. Krug is on the verge of being back in the lineup. Mm-hmm. We know that.
Bergeron.
The idea is that hopefully Charlie McAvoy will be back in time for the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Zdeno Chara, we assume, is going to be healthy for the playoffs.
I would think so. I would sense a lot more panic, I think, coming from the Bruins if they thought this was serious enough that he was going to miss time in the playoffs. I just think this turns into, he's banged up, and he's going to need some time, but this is something they wanted to give Zdeno Chara anyway down the stretch going into the playoffs. So, and he was telling us on the road trip in Carolina that he's not a big fan of sitting during the regular season. So, you know, maybe this serves a benefit while also allowing him to heal up.
All right, so who are your odd man out defensively, if everybody's healthy?
Let me see. Chara, McAvoy, Krug, Miller. I think it comes down to who's playing best. I mean, I think you could go Grizzly Holden. Could go Grizzly Carlo. I think it comes down to one of those guys, McQuaid, whichever one of those players. It could depend on matchups and who they're playing,
right?
Which style of player you need more. And certainly it could come down to which player is playing better. But I think that's a toss-up. But now, I don't think there's one guy you say, this is definitely
going in. I've got five that I want in the lineup right now out of eight. and McQuaid, Carlo, and Holden.
Yes.
Pick one of those three to play the other, along with, you know, I got Chara, McAvoy, Krug, Miller, Grizzlick, and insert the other guy here.
If Carlo plays with the tenacity that he played with last night and that he's shown in flashes recently, I like that in the playoffs. Yeah. And I think he skates well enough for a big guy, and he's big and strong, that, you know, he would be the guy. But he has to show that fire in order to play. And the other thing with him is that, you know, there are times he makes more visible mistakes than maybe the other two do that are going to hurt you in the playoffs, too. So it's a tough decision, but yeah, I'm the same way. It comes down to one of those three guys. You decide who you're going
to
play.
All right, let's get to some of your calls here. 617-779-0985. Jimmy, you're up with Johnston and Haggerty here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, buenos dias, senores.
What's up, man?
So, yeah, Grizzlick, seventh player candidate. I think he's great. But I called because the road trip coming up to Winnipeg, and I know you guys are slamming Winnipeg. My wife and I were there in November for a whole week. You got to go to the Exchange District. You got to meet Dancing Gabe at the arena. He's got a book out. And I know it sounds like Judd is a pizza guy. I definitely go to the Forks for pizza and to the Argentinian pizza place.
Well, the Winnipeg Chamber of Commerce thanks you for your contribution to the show. I've been to Winnipeg many times. It's fine.
It's not one of
my favorite cities, but it's fine.
It's one of those, like, you know, first prize is like 3 nights in Winnipeg. Second prize is, you know, 5 nights in Winnipeg.
Yeah, it's got a Moxie's attached to the arena, which in Canada, Moxie's is like a loungier version of Hooters. Like, it's kind of like that, but it's classed up.
Oh, can you get classier than Hooters?
Well, you certainly can.
Okay.
So it's like that. So as long as
it's Canadian, so it's a more polite.
You would appreciate this. They've got a dry rub salt and pepper ribs there that are out of this world.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah.
Dave in the car, you're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
This call goes out to all Bruins fans. If they're not watching, they should be, because we're seeing something special with Marchand. He's reaching a point that's very seldomly seen. I've been watching Bruins hockey for 50 years, and I've seen it with John Béliveau and Bobby Orr. They motivate the whole team by their play, and Marchand has been playing this type of hockey, and it's something special to see.
Well, I mean,
I congratulate him for putting John Béliveau and Brad Marchand in the same sentence. That might be the first and last time that ever happens. I appreciate that.
Well, but you know what? The case made there that, look, Brad Marchand has been one of the few star. Like, you know, we're talking about him being a star earlier.
Yes.
And, well, on a team that's devoid of stars right now, where a lot of your star players have been out, you know, Brad Marchand is kind of willing the team on in a lot of nights. I mean, and last night was one of them. He has a point in every one of those goals last night.
And the good thing is, as Judd and Beersy referenced, he's pissed that he doesn't get that call when Jamie Benn comes in and has head contact. And obviously he wants a call there. He's chirping the refs afterwards. He doesn't go out and do something stupid. He goes out and he makes them pay, and he makes plays to help them win the game. And I loved that play at the end where he has the puck at the dot. You think he's going to shoot the puck. Everybody thinks he's going to shoot the puck. And he passes it down low to Pasternak, curling around for the goal. And that's been really the last few years, the real elevation and maturation of his game is the passing part of it and making other players better and not just holding on to it and dangling and shooting and, you know, playing the one against everybody else game that he's so good at and he does from time to time. And that's really made him the complete player, is that ability to see the ice, to pass, and to take over games in the right way, like he did last night when things aren't going his way. He's an MVP type player. He's a superstar. He's one of the best players in the league. That's why it's infuriating that he doesn't get some of the calls that he deserves.
Dan is in New Hampshire. You're up next here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Yeah, well, I'm just following up on what you were just saying, Joe. But you know, the thing you always heard for years when you talk about Marchand as a superstar, he plays on the same line as Bergeron. Bergeron makes him look good. Well, you know what? Bergeron hasn't been there for the last 12 games. He's been the best player on the ice. This guy is, without a doubt, a superstar. And damn it, he should be getting those calls that superstars get. He should have got that call in St. Louis, and he should have got that call last night. And I'm pissed. Thank you.
All right, appreciate the call. See, I dislike it in the NBA. I dislike it in the NHL when a superstar is graded differently by the officials. And we do see it. There's no question you see it. I don't like the superstar treatment, But if you're going to have it, yes, and it's going to be part of the game, yes, then yeah, I mean, I would put him on that level where you should, you know, as you said earlier, Brad Marchand is a guy that people should be paying to see, right? When the Bruins come to town, and you're, you know, oh, who's playing tonight? Like, you're watching Brad Marchand. Like, you want to pay attention to him.
Everybody is.
Yes.
Both sides, the opponents and the home team.
Right.
Yes.
And like, if the officials are going to call it that way, then yes, you should act accordingly. I hate that, though. I do dislike that.
Like, I know you
because
do.
Because it shouldn't enter into it.
You know, the same way
that Brad Marchand's, you know, reputation as a diver shouldn't enter into the fact that he doesn't get the penalty shot on Monday night.
Right. And at a certain point, you know, that are they ever going to fine Sidney Crosby for diving, embellishing? do you really think you're ever going to see that? No.
Yeah, no.
No. And that's my point, is like there are certain things that a certain level and strata of player in the NHL is not subject to. And that's just the way it is. Like, it shouldn't be that way. We can argue until the cows come home. There shouldn't be a caste system. There shouldn't be superstars. They shouldn't get different consideration from the refs. And you're right. In an ideal world, it wouldn't happen. But we live in the real world where that stuff happens every day. The NHL is certainly guilty of that, as most leagues are. And when a player goes supernova and reaches a certain level in his abilities and what he's done and his accomplishments and how he's perceived in the league, then I think you need to treat them that way and treat them accordingly. And Marchand has reached that level. And, you know, the caller's right. You know, a lot of people would say it's Patrice Bergeron that's the straw that's stirring the drink on that line. Well, it's just as much Brad Marchand. I think he's proven his greatness all by himself, in addition to being an outstanding duo with Patrice Bergeron. And he deserves those kind of calls. That non-call on the breakaway in overtime still blows my mind, because every other player that's got the numbers that Brad Marchand has would get that call, and it would be at least a minor penalty, if not a penalty shot. And, you know, for him not to get that, it's ridiculous. It's a double standard.
I heard it speculated that I guess the official that was right there is kind of a newbie, and perhaps he choked on it a little bit.
Yeah,
didn't want to go for the penalty shot in overtime. It's like
Kendrick Nicholson, I think his name is. Yeah,
yeah.
He's a young official, and maybe that's the case. Maybe he didn't want to affect the game in overtime, and you can chalk that up to that. But, you know, when it's Marchand that's not getting the call, it just adds to it, and it adds to the conspiracy theories out there.
Mark, you're up next here with Johnston and Haggerty on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Morning.
I agree with you. If Connell can close out the season the way he played last night, okay, great. If not, then he needs to sit and put McQuaid in. Because you know what? Quaida blocks a lot of shots, guys. He puts himself in front of more pucks than I've ever seen before in my life.
What do you think, Joe? Thanks for the call, Mark. What do you think has been up with Carlo this year? Is it related to not having Chara there as the security blanket like he did pretty much all of last year? You know, because he looks like he's had a little bit of a confidence issue for a good chunk of this season.
He's 21. He's in his second year. He barely played in the AHL. You know, I think he's still developing his game and figuring out what he can do and building that confidence and all that stuff. And you take him away from Chara, and then you put him on a pairing mostly with Torey Krug, where all of a sudden he becomes a guy that has to worry a lot more about being the last line of defense and has to hold back constantly, because Krug is a guy that takes a lot of risks and plays up a lot. And I think that's sort of messed with maybe his instincts a little bit. And it's certainly on the offensive side, moving the puck side, it's curbed that to the point where there are times he just wasn't, you know, taking any chances, and he was... You know, it got to a point, I think, confidence-wise, where he was just trying to get the puck off his stick as soon as possible. And, you know, that's tough for any defenseman when you're in that place. And I think the other part of it is that he's a nice guy. And I think it takes a little bit to kind of stir that nastiness out of him. I don't think it comes instinctively and naturally to him. And I think he's got to figure that out. And he's going to get older and more experienced and, you know, understand that there's a time and place where he has to just be a mean SOB in the defensive zone, and he has to be a guy that plays to his size and strength and in his what he does well out there. And he's getting that, and I think it's a process. You know, everybody wants him, I think, to be that guy right off the bat, but when you
remember that he didn't play in the minor leagues and that he started as a top-pairing defenseman last year in his first year in the league,
right.
It's going to take a while for all that stuff to come in, and he didn't play in the playoffs last year.
They say about defensemen in the NHL, like, you need, like, 200 games before you really start to get it.
Totally.
So he's still a ways to go before he gets to that.
But Adam McQuaid is a great example for him because Adam McQuaid, also, extremely nice guy, soft-spoken, super guy, awesome dude, very friendly and, you know, not a mean guy off the ice, but he is a tough warrior. And
he had some words for Jamie Benn last night.
He will do what needs to be done on the ice, and I think Carlo's figuring that out.
Thanks for sitting in this week. Good to have you here.
It did.
We appreciate everybody joining us. Stick around for Gasper and Murray coming up next. We'll be back with you next Saturday here on the Sports Hub Hockey Show.